Hey folks, if you're being treated for anxiety and depression and you're still struggling, consider joining one of my DBT groups. Skills groups are a supportive, inclusive, cost-effective way to get the skills you need to create the life you want. Go to my website, rebeccashackney.com/groups for more information. Hi, I'm Rebecca Shackney. Across the country, the back-to-school season is upon us. But due to the corona crisis, this is unlike any other year. Everyone is worrying about balancing educational needs and mental health with physical safety. As a psychotherapist, I'm spending my days helping parents and students manage the stress as they face the upcoming school year. As the mother of three, I'm worried, just like everyone else. This is A Therapist Takes Her Own Advice. Today I have the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Ray Sanchez, superintendent of the Ossining Union Free School District. Like educators around the country, he and other administrators, teachers, and staff have been working tirelessly to create back-to-school plans that meet the diverse needs of families everywhere. Dr. Sanchez took time out during this extremely busy time to talk to me. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this, Dr. Ray Sanchez.
I'm excited to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. So how are you doing?
We're good. I mean, clearly, I think there's a lot going on, in one's personal life with, three children and, managing their lives. And then on top of that, obviously, a superintendent here in Ossining. And trying to reopen a school district in a pandemic and really considering academics and safety. There's a lot going on. But there's a lot of good, great, supportive community members, staff members, and obviously I have a great support at home as well with my wife.
Excellent, excellent. So tell me about yourself.
Yeah, I was born and raised here locally in Tarrytown. I'm first generation. Both my parents came from Cuba. And at that time, a lot of Cuban immigrants came to Tarrytown. And so I was born and raised in that area. So I've really kind of never left. And now I have three children. I have my daughter, who's 23. She's in Philadelphia right now and happily employed and graduated from Delaware. And then I have two very young children, although they, they get older every day. So I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And so it's Madison's the youngest, Hunter is my son, and then Morgan is my oldest. Beyond that, I have a lot of family in the area, and we stay in touch. I'm very connected to my family, although we've kind of spread out in different places. That's, we remain connected, and a lot of really great friends in the region as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I saw this wonderful photo you posted of your mother on the anniversary of arrival from Cuba.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how your mother's sacrifice and your grandparents' sacrifice influenced you?
Yeah. And I know we're on a podcast, so I won't try not to tear up. My parents chose to make the journey to the States, and they made their own individual sacrifices in doing so and left a lot of family behind. But, they were always, from the minute they came to the United States, they were hardworking. We did everything. I mean, we worked part-time jobs, we cleaned offices, we whatever it did. But we never lost the sense of family, and that's remained with me. And, we always ate at grandma's house on Saturday and came together as a group of families. I remember, the other part is that, and not many know, I mean, I came from poverty. I would go with my grandma to get whatever food we can get. And, I remember grabbing the government cheese at the time. That was, for lack of a better word, the popular item. And I always remember that. My grandfather always told me, if you make a dollar, spend 99 cents. So you always save a penny. So those type of messages stayed with me for a long period of time. So I think there's a sense that my family always taught me to be humble and reminded me of that. The sense of family is really, really important and ingrained in me. And his deep desire to address issues of equity have always been there. Because I have my own personal story that I realize. And, just like they wanted for me, I want for every child. I want the best for them.
Absolutely. That's incredible. So tell me about your career trajectory.
Yeah. I always think when I look at my career, you know, opportunities present themselves and you never know when they're going to present themselves. And sometimes you got to grab the opportunity, even though you might think you might not be fully, fully ready. So I started as a teacher. I actually taught in the Arlington School District. I lived in Tarrytown and traveled an hour down to, you know, north, I should say, to the Arlington School District. And I taught first and second grade. It was just some really great years. And then eventually I applied and got a job here in Ossining. And quite honestly, I was living in Ossining. I had a condo in Ossining. And, you know, I've told this story. I actually did not know. I lived right across Riverview Condos, right across from Claremont School. But I left so early and arrived so late that I never really knew it was a school. And the night before, I was driving around looking because I had an interview at that school. And I was driving around. I found all the schools but Claremont. And, well, everyone kept telling me it's by the cable station, by the cable station. I'm like, I live by the cable station. Long story short, I eventually found it. We since then have a sign outside the school that says it's Claremont School if you've seen it. So, and then I came here as a fourth grade teacher, and the superintendent, after a few years, said, you know, do you want to become an administrator? And they, you know, the Teachers College, along with Putnam Northern Westchester BOCES, created this administrative program, but you had to be recommended by your superintendent. So Dr. Raleigh at the time recommended me, and I became a director of ENL and became assistant principal at Park. I left a year to become a principal in Peekskill. And then he invited me back to become assistant superintendent for elementary education and human resources. And then I applied for the superintendency, and I've been superintendent for 7 years now. So that's really been my path. But some of those I would say I didn't necessarily go out looking for. The opportunity was presented in front of me, and it was just too good to be true to not take hold of it. And I feel very fortunate that I've had those opportunities and still remain fortunate that, you know, I'm superintendent here in Ossining.
Well, we're really fortunate to have you. We actually came to Ossining, I think the year you became superintendent, the year after. Okay. No, but we also got to hear from a different side. We were neighbors with the Schneckers, so we heard about the process of hiring you. So that was when we were very excited to have such an amazing superintendent.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
So what do you miss about teaching?
You know, the kids. I still remember, and probably the easiest way to me to describe is like when I was a first grade teacher, I was really teaching kids how to read. And when that light bulb goes off, when you're teaching a concept and it goes off, it's glory, right? And just really, you know, you're really making a difference. And the relationships that you get to form with your class. And so even on a different level, even though I try to engage and try to get into classrooms as much as I can to get to know children and for them to know who I am as a person, not necessarily by title, you know, I teach some college courses and, you know, at universities. And partially it's because I like to teach and I enjoy it. And I see it, you know, maybe on from an adult education perspective, but, you know, that click and knowing that you're making a difference in an individual life. And the best part is when those stories and those students come back to you and mm-hmm. they can share with you some of the impacts that you had on them. It's just rewarding. That's all. So, you know, that personal, you know, touch with the students and teaching them concepts and letting that light bulb go off to me is just, there's nothing better.
That's amazing. It's funny. We have a rising first grader and he has just had that light bulb go off. And he and I were reading a book yesterday and he kept saying, oh, I want to show Miss Brady I can do this. And it was so heartwarming. I have to email her. But he kept saying it over and over again. I have to tell Miss Brady. Have to tell Miss Brady. So, you know, the kids don't just stick in your minds. You stick in the kids' minds so much. It's really incredible. So as a parent, how are you doing with all of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, I talk to a lot of parents here in Ossining and they tell me their stories. And I can empathize. I mean, I really know as a parent, the challenges of work in this case and being there for your child. And so there's that, you know, the learning part that we've gone through, and obviously learning never stops, but, you know, the formal part of education that we've paused on for summer. So that part's, you know, was a challenge. But the other is, you know, now it's just, you know, there, you want to just make sure that to the extent that you can, that you create some normalcy for your child, right? That, you know, I've been really trying to, my wife and I have been really dedicated to trying to get our kids outside and off screens and engaging in a obviously in a safe way with others, so that they can feel like kids. And and so there's that aspect of that. We just recently came from Vermont. My brother has a little place up there, and it was just nice to see my, you know, try to, you know, go down the streams and try to catch crawfish and all, you know, and I'm like just sitting there saying, this is what I want for my kids. So, you know, we're just trying to find a balance of creating some, letting them be kids, you know, in this really challenging time for adults and children.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. So are you happy with the options that your kids have this year for education?
Yeah, you know, I'm still studying it, so we're not just yet sure what the results are be. I know everyone's working hard across the regions,
Absolutely.
The school districts and everyone else, and everyone's got really great intentions. But, you know, what it means for your schedules, what it means for, you know, the balance, and that's stuff that we're still kind of hashing out as a family and what it really, you know, so before we can really formally say this is great or not. And I think the best thing we can do is obviously when school, you know, is when kids are fully into school and we realize that, you know, this isn't replacing it, but we're all working hard to, you know, make sure that, you know, we can keep kids steady, learning and social emotionally, we want to protect them and care for them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're going through is exactly what everyone else is going through right
yeah.
now. So let's talk about Ossining a little bit.
Sure.
Walk us through the process of how you formulated the plan briefly.
Yeah. So we've been talking and meeting since basically April. And just know that a lot of that discussion was done without like real formal guidance until this past July when the governor finally gave out what he would put out as quote unquote recommendations. And the state education department did the same, not too far removed. But we started studying a lot of what was happening in other states, assuming that they weren't going to, you know, when you looked at them, they weren't so different in some of the recommendations. And then in turn, you know, we've had various stakeholders from our facilities director, our transportation director, our nurse coordinator, all really looking at various aspects of the work. And then, you know, we finally got the guidance to what it is. And we knew, you know, these are the sort of the options that we would have had, i.e. the hybrid version and trying to move more to 5 days of instruction where we could. And then more recently, you know, we've responded to family needs and we've provided a remote option. And I think throughout this, I think what's really important to, as a sort of overarching context is that, you know, we're trying to create responsive plans. Plans that are responsive to needs of students, that they're responsive to family feedback that we would say, and staff, responsive to what might happen. You know, we still don't know, right, from day to day. And also responding to, you know, obviously what the kids are telling us in terms of their needs and from a learning perspective. So we're still working through. We're studying facilities, you know, with coming out with, you know, one option. It may provide other opportunities for those that are choosing to come in, you know, for live instruction. And those are things we're studying right now. I can't necessarily speak to specifics, but, and, you know, meeting with stakeholders. Every meeting we have with a family, with a student, with a staff member, you know, and they ask us questions and it either confirms our thinking or it just adds a little layer that maybe we, you know, can elevate the plan a little bit further, i.e. like parents, I think it was yesterday during a Facebook Live session, they shared it would be helpful for us to know, if we don't know the teachers, at least what dates, which days in the hybrid, if we are going to go in the two, you know, that so that we can begin planning from as a parent. And I asked them, I said, would that be helpful? And a lot of them said, yes, that would be helpful. So, you know, we're going back and seeing if we can do that. And so you might get one layer of information and then the next one, you know, with the specific instructor might come later. But the point is that we're trying to build responsive programs and plans. And every piece of feedback is really, really important for us.
Well, and I've heard you've been extremely responsive. I mean, I've heard stories about principals, emailing and calling on Sundays and mm-hmm. just really responsive. And I know people are really grateful for that. What have been some of the obstacles you've encountered?
Yeah, I think there have been many. I mean, number one, from the ordering materials and then being delayed, that's one, right? No matter how proactive you were. You know, we just heard recently that computers that we ordered back in early May, maybe, or have been delayed. We're working out, and then it just throws your plans off a little bit, that's one. The space challenges are another. You're trying to double in size to serve all your kids because you're taking half and multiplying them times two, in other words. And just the equity issues. There are various needs in our community that we're trying to really address. This is elevated, to some extent, what we know are some of the needs in our community, even more so. And so trying to address them before we go back into a space, if we know it, we can predict it. If we can predict it, we can plan for it. And mm-hmm. that's really what we've kind of trying to work through right now. So there's a lot of layers to the challenges, and trying to appease everybody is something that, is a challenge, knowing that that's just not going to happen. But, we're always striving to make everyone feel happy, our kids and our families. And yet I know that in reality, it's probably not going to happen. But nonetheless, it still hurts that you can't, right? So, those are some of the overarching pieces to it.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, I know the social media buzz is really heated, and how do you deal with that?
Some of it comes to me and I hear about it. I think it helps to some extent in that it makes me assess my communication a little bit, in terms of how much have I, maybe I haven't been clear enough. Maybe I have. Where there's, ambiguity, I can attempt to clear it up. We just put something out just recently, just a frequently asked questions from Department of Health that I think will help families. So it's out there, and I think we always just put it in perspective. But, there might be the extremes to whatever the messages are, but somewhere in between, there's some takeaway, right? So we just try to put it in balance. And what I just want from everyone is to really understand that we may not necessarily always make the right, we're not always perfect. But what I hope there's an understanding is that we're working hard to try to get there. And nor will we ever be perfect, but we're always striving for it. The last one is that I often use the opportunity when I do engage with families and know that maybe social media, it's always best. Sometimes as adults, we even children, we all, we go there as the first place. And maybe the first place is to come to the school and we can try to address it before it becomes sort of this, overarching. And right now everyone's so sensitive that, we just have to be cautious of, what we're putting out there because, it just becomes perception and then perception becomes reality for some people.
Right, right. And it's really hard and this is really stressful for absolutely everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's no wonder things are so heated. But I think that that's a really good suggestion to come to school administrators, principals, teachers before you put it out there on social media.
Yeah, I think,
media.
To your point a little earlier, our principals are working hard to be responsive. When parents email me and it has like 6 or 7 bullets, I often just email them back and say, can I call you? Because it's just easier to describe it. And we go, because even the written word can be misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes just, making sure that everyone's clear on what we're sharing. And that's why, over the course of the next few weeks, we intend to have a number of parent informational sessions. We have a board meeting tomorrow night and then some various other meetings. So, hopefully we repeat so that, individuals feel more and more comfortable with the options we're presented and that we work together because the plan will only work if we're doing it together.
If you could clarify one thing to the people of Ossining, what would that be? What's the most misunderstood subject in all of this?
Yeah, that's a good question because there's so many others. I just learned today, someone said you should tell them we haven't heard officially what our plan is. And I misunderstood that. I pause a little bit to say, you know, I didn't officially make the word and say it's hybrid. I assume that when everyone knew we were going live, that we were going to a hybrid model. I've had to clarify that, and I've had to put that back in. I think the questions of COVID testing have surfaced. You know, are we responsible for testing our students and families? That has been out there, and partially because in no way do I blame our parents and our community and our staff for thinking it's there's snippets from the governor and his statements that in turn lead to some misperception. So he recently put out, it wasn't in his original guidance, but he said, you know, your COVID testing plan has to be on your website by this Friday. Well, that led a lot of families to think, are you testing your students before they come? Are you testing your staff before they come? And that's never been the case. You know, we're not a testing site, and I leave that, and we collaborate with our, you know, medical professionals to make sure of that. So those are just some of the pieces, and then the clarity around the schedules and how instruction will take place. And that one, I think, you know, we're working to clarify that a little bit further, but we're still tweaking it as we go along. And I would say that that's going to continue to be tweaked with every meeting we have with families, because otherwise, if it's a plan, then I might as well, you know, it'd be easier to just put out a memo and say, this is it. But if we're sincerely listening, then you need to adapt a little bit based on what you hear from your families. And we've done that along the way. And we've, you know, we just had a student meeting at the high school, and the kids gave us some good feedback. So, you know, that's important for us to integrate. And otherwise, you know, people lose faith in the meetings too. They'll just say, well, they're not going to listen. So we are listening, and we're continuing to work and think. And at the board meeting coming up, I hope to share more publicly some of the challenges we're facing and being a little more transparent.
So what happens if there's a positive test in the schools after we open?
I just sent out, that's actually in the guidance that I just gave from the Department of Health. They gave us a real strong FAQ. And there's, you know, basically where it's going to start is, you know, if there's anything, we're going to work with Department of Health. They're going to guide us, you know, and whether it calls for the closure of the school, whether it calls for the closure of, you know, the cancellation of that class, those are the variations that need to happen. And I have to say, some families have made the choice to go virtual for that very reason too, that they think it's inevitable that we're going to be in that version. And so they'd rather just start there and put themselves in that position so that it's less, you know, back and forth. And so
that's one of the reasons we did that as well.
Yeah. And I understand it too. There's a movement among educators now to start virtual this first month. There's a movement. Unions are starting to, you know, raise their voice and others to say, let's just start September virtual, see where things are. The flip side to that is the numbers aren't, you know, if we're going to open, this is the time to open. There's no better numbers, like from a like statistical right. perspective. Like this is, you know, as close to zero as, you know, in the, at least in terms of in relation to where other states are. So there's that aspect of it. So, you know, if you don't open now, when is the right time to open? But, you know, there's a little bit of hesitancy on everyone's part. And I get it. You know, we're just going to start seeing an uptick, you know, as other states around us. I mean, we're bordering states that are starting to see a little bit of an uptick, and it's inevitable that it's going to come to New York. And that very well might happen. That's their hypothesis. And I'm, you know, you test your, you know, you hope it's not accurate, but that's very well could be the case. But I've heard that story from families is, you know, they prefer the hybrid, but they just think we're going to be in this space. So might as well just start there. What I have to worry about as a superintendent is overall is, you know, all families. And then I just worry about students that really, you know, connectivity issues and everything else, like their learning's not as, and so we're trying to figure out where we can maybe open our schools at least for students and families, you know, to say, you want to drop them off, we'll provide childcare and you can get to work and they're going to be able to log on. We know there's internet access, there'll be food, and open it up to, you know, any family that wants to do it. Obviously, you know, we need numbers and people that would have to register, and I can't have like the ins and outs, but And I think that's just another way we have to respond to our families, because going remote is just, you know, that just exacerbates some of the work challenges that families have.
Right.
So, and if we're, you know, from an education, we need funding. We need, you know, we got to do our part for the economy too, and still maintain safety. So, you know, the governor was talking about the cogs working together, and we know we're an important cog in that. But we may or may not be able to move the cog. That's the other part. So, mm-hmm. And safety is really, obviously a priority right now.
Excellent. So how are you managing your stress right now?
It's, you know, I can't say I'm probably doing it so well. You know, that's the very honest answer, because there's a high level of stress, you know, for all the reasons, not only just if everything was moving forward in a linear way and just getting that would be stressful enough. But, you know, I just shared some of the obstacles. So every obstacle presents just, okay, we got to go back to the drawing board, or we got to edit. And so that's, you know, that's, those are just layers to the work. But, you know, I, like I said, I have a you know, very supportive wife at home, and my kids, and, you know, the weekends have been more of our time. And knowing that together we've been able to work out the challenges of child, you know, my kids and others, you know, in terms of their health and wellness, then it's one less point of stress. And I'm walking, you know, wake up in the morning and we walk for about 2 miles and listen to a podcast or listen to the radio. Maybe I'll listen to this, I'll clearly listen to this at some point. So those are helpful, you know, just disconnect and not make it educationally related sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Really helpful. And I just started a book. So let's see.
Excellent.
Let me see if I can get through that one. But
what are you reading?
I'm going to get the title wrong, but it's True North. It's about leaders in various organizations, not just in education, and how they've worked to maintain, like, their core values are integrated into the organizations. Use an example of Starbucks and others, and how those companies were developed in the sense of authenticity that one has to maintain as a leader.
Excellent. So what advice do you have for the parents who are struggling?
Yeah. Be there for each other. You know, it's okay to reach out. You know, we don't have to take this on alone. And if there are many great communities, but Ossining, you know, stands out as a very supportive community. I think there's a lot of individuals that want to help. And the question is, how do we create circles for ourselves to just talk and share frustrations and share successes and share? So I would just say, you know, you have to reach out. And, you know, I worry sometimes about parents going into the winter months and maybe just, you know, this sense of isolation that can happen. And I think, you know, we're going to try as a school community to, you know, support the community piece. And I think also, you know, and we've said it, and I think, you know, it's referenced here, is you can't care for others if you're not caring for yourself. And so there's an element of this that, you know, you have to pause and say, and it's hard now with time, but, you know, you got to take a half hour, and half hour might have been an hour in the past, right? But you have to take the time and find something that you really find and appreciate and, you know, find brings you joy. There's a lot of self-help type ideas, but mm-hmm. in the end, from breathing to taking a, you know, 30-minute walk, or they don't necessarily have to be costly and take a lot of your time, but you got to find a little bit of space to do that. And once again, I just say, just reach out. Like, don't, you know, the struggles, and when we get back into school, if there's challenges, you know, the school's here for you, and we don't want to add more layers of stress to anyone. We want to help.
Yeah.
So that it helps our kids.
Absolutely. And one of the things I always say to my kids is that there's no problem that we can't fix. Mm-hmm. So I really, and I think that reaching out and talking about it is so important, because when you sit with it, it's so much bigger in your mind than it probably is in real life. And when you talk about it, you can solve the problem.
Yep, I agree.
So that's a really good suggestion. So how can we as a community best support you and the administration and the teachers and staff and students?
I would say continue doing what we're doing. You know, the community's given us, I know they're anxious, but I feel like they've given us adequate space to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important. Granted, you know, some families are emailing and that's okay. We get it. But I think what's important is that we, you know, you've given us a little bit of space and then ask for clarification when we need to and help us. And understand that this is all iterative. It's not going to be perfect. And I might come back to you and say, we missed something. We got to change it. So understand the perspective of this is that we're really building this like it's uncharted and we know that. And we've never done this before. So we're all, you know, trying to learn and any edits we have is in the best interest of our kids and families and staff, I should say. And the other part of it too is just, you know, reaching out to each other and just making sure, like I said before, just be conscious of what others might need and in addition to what you need. Together, there might be some superpowers that we create. You know, we may complement each other really well. And I've seen that start to happen. And, you know, I think those are probably a few of the spaces that our families can help us with. I mean, we're sitting in a room that normally I'd just say is full of books and supplies and other that we pause and we collect, and they're all donations, and we get them back in the hands of our kids. You know, that's just speaks to awesomeing and the willingness to support each other and support all our children across the community.
So what specifically could someone do if they're listening today and they want to support? Maybe you've mentioned there are some families who are really struggling right now. Maybe some families are struggling emotionally. Is there a place that someone can go to volunteer?
Yeah, we're working towards, and I use that phrase a lot because we have in some, but we are working towards creating some more structured volunteer opportunities. We're actually right now we're talking through a concept, but it, you know, I'm hoping it lifts, is to create like a real hub where we can store the resources and call it like a play on Amazon Prime where, you know, the family needs something, we get the ticket and we get the resources out to the family. That's going to take some work if we get that up off the ground. So I use that as an example because those are the type of things that we're trying to, and we're going to need human capital to really kind of lift some of these. And I may not have enough staff to do that, but I know there's a lot of caring. I see it with food distributions that are happening throughout this community. You know, people can dedicate a half hour, an hour here and there. We'll take it. And the other part too is also, you know, I assume there'll be volunteer opportunities even just to work with kids and helping them academically. And I think those are places where you have expertise to come in and share, even if there's careers and others, like share it just to share that expertise with our kids. I think those are all places, but we'll probably be putting out some real, like, discreet, you know, pointed opportunities that might be available for our families. And, you know, I have to say, when we've done that, it's been very humbling to see how many families actually choose to help us. Not surprising, but just humbling.
Excellent. No, I mean, I would love to be able to help. I can teach mindfulness skills. I can, you know, offer DBT skills or teach people how to manage their emotions more effectively. And I would love to do that. But it would be helpful to know how to do that.
Yeah. No, I'm sitting here saying, we have to talk after the podcast because there are clearly some opportunities that, but I think everyone has their unique skills. I've seen that in the threads of, you know, whether it's a Facebook Live or in the comments on a Zoom or others, just like, you know, I have this skill. I think someone just put in the thread yesterday's Facebook Live that they're an engineer and they can help us problem solve. We're trying to create, you know, and some families have said, you know, if we can to try to create these opportunities, particularly on those days that kids are virtual where families can still drop off, you know, get their kids can still engage in the online learning, but, you know, then in turn families can get to work. Those are structures we're trying to work out, but we may need, you know, in addition to our staff, some additional help in that. So, you know, we would put that out to everybody and see where we can, but there's a lot of expertise here in Ossining and actually neighboring communities and others, you know, we don't just pause and just maintain, like if anyone can help us, and in a virtual world like Zoom and others, and you can expand your reach. And we have, partnerships with Pace University to provide some like student teachers and some tutoring help. But now because some of it's virtual, we can actually reach students that are at the New York City campus. So it's just really provided some opportunity and people want to help. And it's been good.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great. Have you started producing your back to school video?
I don't know what I'll be able to produce, but honestly, and I've seen on Facebook, some families have sent to me that, you know, I hope he doesn't drop the ball on that one. It's going to be hard for me to replicate, but it might be a montage of the old ones together, and just as a reminder. But you know, I saw the one with there's a high school principal. It's like an Empty Hammer song, and I got a lot of that saying, you know, are you going to do the same thing? And I'd love to. It's some of those take a lot of time. So
finally, what has been your guilty pleasure during this pandemic?
Wow, that's an interesting question.
I mean, a lot of people are eating richer foods or binge watching something on Netflix or just all kinds of things just to, you know, for comfort.
Yeah. You know, what I would say is just I've been enjoying ice cream a lot more than I have in the past, significantly more. And that's where we saw each other, actually. I was down trying the new ice cream shop right by the waterfront.
Bigfoot, yeah.
Yeah, so been there a couple of times. And so, you know, I'd say, you know, ice cream has surfaced a little bit more as a guilty pleasure during this pandemic. So, and it may stay after the pandemic too. So,
excellent. Yeah. So I know that the people at Bigfoot will be happy to hear that.
Oh, they have a great little spot there.
Yeah, they're our neighbors. We're lucky to live next door.
Right?
We got to be taste testers before they opened.
You never know what you're going to find when you go there, because every day a little different?
Yes.
Yeah.
So is there something that you would like to speak to that I haven't asked you?
You know, if there's anything, this is, I think the pandemic has shown where, you know, there are some silver linings in all this. I'm not suggesting that, you know, the concern and the, you know, obviously the health concerns are, but there's some new learning. And, you know, I think it's led me to think and put things a little bit more in perspective than I have in the past. And I think we all need to kind of pause. And then the fact of, you know, this is like how we do this is, you know, and how we get through this is for being there with each other and having hope. And no matter if it's pandemic or not, those are values and, you know, big ideas that we shouldn't lose when we go back, and we will go back. And my worry sometimes is that, you know, there's this theory of creep, meaning that like sort of these old philosophies and thought processes come into play. And we just have to continue to remind ourselves to, you know, make sure we continue to have hope, put things in perspective and be there for each other. Like those are qualities and, you know, characteristics that we want to maintain no matter what. And I would say that. And, you know, and at the same time, I think we've also learned about ourselves a little bit more and what we can do to, you know, just self, you know, from a personal perspective and then as a society as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's so important right now that we are there for each other and there for ourselves. And really gentle with each other, because everyone is going to have some sort of an emotional reaction to this. And it's really important to not be afraid of that and push it away. Sure. So we're actually one of the 1,100 families who are doing all virtual. And the reason we did that is we have a six-year-old who is really unable to keep his mask on for any length of time and unable. Mm-hmm. He's a creeper. He'll get closer to you by, you know, little bits. And so if I'm not standing right next to him, he can't be socially distant. So that's why we did that. And we really appreciate that. And we also know a lot of other people who are immune compromised reason, it has made it very much more comfortable for them.
Yeah, so. No, and I appreciate that, and I realize, by putting it out, it's you know, clearly, you know, there was a lot of angst of like, hey, we got this Monday date that people have to make a decision on, and there's not enough details, and, you know, 1,100 shows that some individuals were ready, and still we're going to listen and see what families have to say if there's unique circumstances. You know, we got some emails saying my power's down, and we get it, you know, mm-hmm. we understand. And in no way was it ever intended to add more stress. In fact, just giving the option was to hopefully alleviate some of the stress that families are under. Because it's, you know, I realize that there's a lot. And you know your child. And you've known them even more during how they're responding to, you know, the COVID you know, pandemic and how they are as a learner. And so, you know, that's, I understand. And my son struggles the same. And I worry about that too. You know, because he's been going to camps and the camp, you know, they had two experiences, you know, in either case out there, you know, my son, less or so my daughter, but my son, he really struggled wearing the mask all day. Hates it. And listen, I hate it too. It's just like, but it's, you know, it's a necessity right
now.
And, but I don't know if, you know, I'm going through the same thing. And I don't necessarily have the same option that we presented here. But we'll see. I mean, but yet my youngest, less or so, I wouldn't be as concerned. So like, it just speaks to each child is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And I've had families call me and say, you know, I'm going to do it for this one, but not the other one. And sometimes they told me my child is just highly anxious about this and they will not enter that school, even though I feel comfortable. And so it's just, I mean, there's work to be done now that we have what we have, the information from families and from a staffing perspective. You know, we want to dedicate a teacher to. I've said that to the parents. And we think we can, you know, based on the numbers that we have. And I'll share, like, I mean, it's 1,100. It's about, you know, it's about 10% per grade level almost. And, you know, we're going to work it out.
Great. Well, thank you very much for creating that. And thank you for being here
today. No, this is great. It was actually therapeutic, I have to say.
Excellent.
It took me away from all the other stuff, so I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to A Therapist Takes Her Own Advice. If you connected with what you heard here and you want to work with me, go to my website, RebeccaShackney.com, and send me a message through my contact page. And if you have enjoyed what you've heard here, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.